Well, thank you to the Philadelphia Society for inviting me. I appreciate the honor. I disagree with our panel chair. I think that this is a crisis election, not in the ordinary sense, in which we're going to have a realignment of parties, but I think that it's a crisis election in terms of the regime itself, in terms of regime change, because I think this is the last election in which we will have a chance to stop the regime of political correctness. Political correctness is the ingenious device created by ideological liberalism, or if you want, progressive liberalism, to suppress dissent, created by the administrative state, if you will, to suppress dissent. And it has been fabulously successful, political correctness. If we don't stop it in this election, we will never have another chance because the Republican Party will never try it again. Take my word for it, and you will see that I'm correct. Now, it's very, very clear that the mood of the American electorate is anti-establishment. That's in both parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. The Democrats had their own anti-establishment election, right? That's what Bernie Sanders was all about. But he wasn't a very good candidate. After all, he wasn't even a Democrat. He was, if I can use scientific terms, a two-bit socialist. And even Hillary Clinton had a hard time defeating him. Am I right about that? And the DNC had to rig the election so that Hillary would win. Well, the anti-establishment sentiment won in the Republican Party. Remember, the establishment was going to, we said, I don't know why we use monarchical language, we were going to coronate, if that's a verb, I'm not sure, we were going to coronate Jeb Bush. Remember that? He had all of the money, he had all of the name recognition. He's the one that we wanted to be the presidential candidate. He went nowhere. This was the anti-establishment year for the Republican Party. The people were angry. They were angry at the government. They were angry at the media. They were angry at everyone. Who was the only outsider, the only non-politician? That was Donald Trump. Well, you know, the Republican Party establishment should have seen this coming, should they not? They had the election of 2010, Tea Party victory, yes? They ignored it. Tea Party said, we want smaller government. We want illegal immigration taken care of. We want the Obama budget repealed. We wanted a lot of things, and the Republican Party in the election said, yes, we will give that to you. But they reneged on their promise. The Republican Party didn't take the Tea Party insurgency seriously. You know who took it seriously? Obama did, the Democrats did, because in 2012, they took the Tea Party out of the election, didn't they? They sicked the IRS upon all the Tea Party donors. Tea Party was not a factor in the election of 2012. But they came back in 2014, right? Gave the Republican Party one of the biggest electoral victories in its history. What did the establishment Republicans do? Oh, you're back again? Otra vez? We don't want you again. We don't need you again. You're making the same demands. Get rid of illegal immigration, cut taxes, cut the government. Who was the best speaker that Obama ever had? Paul Ryan. Nancy Pelosi could not have done what Paul Ryan did. He gave Obama his budget without any changes. Did nothing to curb illegal immigration. Did nothing to try to change Obamacare, and so on down the line. Why? Because that would have required too many innovations upon entrenched interests in Washington. You know, Nancy Pelosi said, "I liked it better when there were no real differences between Democrats and Republicans in Congress." You remember her saying that? And she was right. There was a time there weren't any real differences between Republicans and Democrats in Congress. They all got along because they had essentially the same interests in being part of the Washington establishment. Once in a while, the voters intruded. They made outrageous demands. "We don't like this establishment. We want you to do things." But the voters didn't have much say in what went on in Washington. Should the establishment have been surprised that Trump was nominated? They had a preview in the elections of 2010 and 2014, but they ignored it. Should they have been surprised? No. Now, I believe this. If Clinton is elected, the Republican Party will not survive in its present form. Those who believe that we can wait for 8 years, the Trump madness will have subsided, we can pick up the pieces, reestablish the Republican Party, and go on about our business as if nothing happened, that's a fateful dream. That is a simple dream. After 8 years of Clinton, there will be no pieces to pick up. The regime will have changed. The administrative state will have consolidated its victory, and it will be unchallengeable. It will be impossible to challenge it again. Trump's challenge, I think, is the last possible challenge to the complete victory of the administrative state. Now, we say, "Well, my goodness gracious alive, in good conscience, I can't vote for Trump. He's vulgar. He's not a gentleman. What'll I tell my grandchildren in the future? I voted for Trump. How can I defend that to my grandchildren?" Well, I'm here to tell you that elections are not about you as an individual. Elections are political. You have to forget yourself. You have to forget your individual interest and act politically. Do you hear any Democrats say, "Well, I don't really like Hillary, but I'm going to vote for her anyway"? Do you ever hear a Democrat say that? Honestly, not very many. Not very many. Do they say that publicly, and do they make that a campaign issue? Not very many. They are politically unified, and they don't allow cracks to appear in the Democratic Party. I've talked to a lot of people here. Well, in good conscience, it's not about your conscience. It's about preserving the regime. It's about keeping the regime intact and preserving our way of life. Do you know what Hillary... Well, I'm going to defend some of Trump's most egregiously unpolitical correct statements here in a moment, which will give me an opportunity to talk a little bit more about Hillary's view of our future. We know, some people say, we don't know what Trump is going to do. He's unpredictable. He's told us what he wants to do. I don't believe him. I don't trust him. But we know what Hillary is. She's been in office for 30 years. We know exactly what she's going to do. She and Bill are the two most corrupt politicians in our history. She said she's going to bring Bill into the White House. Yes, she's told us that. He's going to run economic policy. He will be there in the White House with her. She is sold, openly sold, her office when she was Secretary of State. And in order to avoid indictment, She corrupted the entire Department of Justice. How could one person corrupt the entire Department of Justice? How is that possible? Right from the beginning, they asked her, do you think you will be indicted? What did she say every time? There is not a chance. Didn't she say that? Every single time. And she was right. How did this guy Comey, FBI director, everybody says, what a stand-up guy. He's as honest as the day is long. He is incorruptible. After all, didn't he stand up to George Bush? Yes, but it's different than standing up to the Clintons now, isn't it? We know what she will do. The rule of law in a Clinton administration will mean nothing. She has corrupted the Department of Justice. The Justice Department has prostituted the idea of the rule of law. Clinton is above the law. What would a Clinton presidency mean? Constitutional scholars today, some other people have referred to this, they talk about a post-constitutional era. You know what that means? We don't need the Constitution anymore. We've outgrown the Constitution. Post-constitutional era is that time in which administrative regulations and administrative rulemaking replaces the Constitution, where where the rule of law is replaced by administration. Now, think of what Hillary will do in picking Supreme Court justices. They will be post-constitutionalists, not original intent jurisprudence, adherents of original intent jurisprudence. They will be post-constitutionalists, where administration will replace the Constitution. We know that for certain. Trump has given us a list of people who he says, I will pick from this list, or these are the kinds of people I will pick from. And we say, well, we don't trust him. He may or he may not do that, but we know for certain who Hillary Clinton will pick. If personal distaste for Trump is a reason for not voting for him, he may be vulgar, perhaps he's not a gentleman, as I've mentioned, but it's not about you. You may think we don't face much danger in this election. If so, you can indulge your individual grievances against Trump, but if you believe, as I do, as I firmly believe, that this is a crucial election, we have to use any weapon that comes to hand. You know, if you're on the battlefield and the enemy has dropped a rusty AK-47 and it's covered with mud, we can't refuse to pick it up, because it's not that shiny parade ground rifle that we're used to carrying. We have to pick up that weapon and use it because it's the only one that's at hand. Now, we could have stopped political correctness a long time ago. We had our chance. We could have stopped affirmative action in 1980. You remember when Ronald Reagan said, I will stop affirmative action with the stroke of a pen. You all remember his campaign promise? When Reagan, as a candidate, said, I will do that, he didn't. You must be joking. I'm sorry.
It's very clear you're not joking.
I owe Mr. Edwards' apology there. I was too flip. Well, we didn't stop it. And when we didn't stop affirmative action, then we gave in to political correctness. You charge any Republican with racism today, and they will collapse. Whether the charge is frivolous, whether it is fantastic, whether it is well-founded or ill-founded. Any charge of racism against a Republican, they will collapse and retreat. We've all seen that. Now, just let me mention the two things I wanted to defend Trump on. I was watching one of Trump's speeches. I think it was the one he gave in San Diego. And, you know, Trump is not a professional politician. He's a little erratic. But I love his honesty. He says what he means, and he doesn't disguise it. And he was giving a speech. Everything was going well, and then all of a sudden, for no reason that I could discern, he started talking about the Trump University lawsuit. And he talked for 4 or 5 minutes. The audience went silent. They couldn't figure out what he was talking about. I couldn't figure out what he was talking about or why he was talking about it. And so then he went back to his regular speech. The next day he gave a speech in Long Beach, and he did the same thing, except this time he talked about the judge Gonzalo Curiel. And then he said something unusual. He says, "What is that guy, a Mexican?" You all remember this. This caused the firestorm. Our speaker, Ryan, said, "That's the very definition of racism." Now, he just said, "What is it? What is that guy, a Mexican?" I immediately said, I was enraged at first that I was watching on the TV, and that's I know he was he's an American-born citizen. But I think that everybody who wasn't an advanced intellectual knew exactly what Trump meant. We appoint people to the bench. We think it's a good thing. Republicans think it's a good thing. Democrats think it's a good thing. We need diversity on the bench. So we get diversity on the bench. The one thing that we're not allowed to say is that when we make diversity appointments to the bench, we also expect the diversity appointee to rule from the point of view of whatever his diversity is. We don't say that because that undermines the idea of the rule of law. Do you know why the progressive liberals don't like Justice Thomas on the bench? Because he says, "I will not rule from the point of view of my racial class interest because I don't believe the law can take into account racial class interests." And he writes in his opinions all the time, so-called benign classifications in the law are the moral equivalent of racial class interests that disadvantage a racial class. They are the moral equivalent. And everybody hates him because you're supposed to, the liberals say, represent your racial class interests. Now, if Hillary gets to appoint justices, they will be appointed because they are willing to represent their diversity on the bench. The rule of law will be undermined, and we'll have to live with that. Now, the other thing, last thing, his plan for refugees. He says, we ought not to let these Syrian refugees into the country because we cannot determine, he says, we should keep out temporarily, he says, refugees from countries coming to the U.S., emigrating to the U.S., from Muslim countries that support terrorism until we can vet them properly. The heads of every one of our security agencies says that we cannot determine who these people are. They don't have proper documentation. We cannot vet them properly, and it is foolish. Terrorists are slipping through the cracks in the security screening. Every one of the heads of our agencies say that. It seems to me to be quite rational to say, yes, we need a ban. Obama says, no, we need to increase. Hillary says, I'm going to increase the number of Syrian refugees and Muslim refugees, generally speaking, above the number that Obama wants. Because she says, we have to demonstrate to the world that's who we are as a people, as if the American character is some kind of an openness to everything, that tolerance is the highest value that we represent. The American character is mostly tolerance to everything. And we have to demonstrate our tolerance by allowing into the country people who may wish us and do harm to us, because that's a demonstration of our high commitment to the idea of tolerance. Now, I'm suggesting to you that this is foolish. And Mrs. Clinton, I believe, if elected, will become the Angela Merkel of the United States in a very short time. And this week, by the way, didn't she say that Angela Merkel was her idea of what a good politician was? And that she said this just this week, 2 days ago. She's my idea of what a great politician is. That's what Mrs. Clinton said. And I will take her idea and advice on the issue of refugees. And you know what they're doing in Germany? Mrs. Merkel and her government has said, if women don't want to be harassed by refugees, Muslim refugees, you know what they say? You should cover and you should be accompanied by a male when you leave your home. That's the advice that women are given in Germany. And there's a national campaign. I'm sitting down right now. I am sitting down. There is a national campaign. Sorry you don't like my speech, but it's... There's a national campaign co-sponsored by the German government and the UN that says women in Germany should learn to cover. That's what we can look forward to in America if the Angela Merkel of America is elected president. That's regime change, and I think that's significant change. Thanks for listening.